Welcome into Still Potable. This is the free version on the CLNS YouTube powered by Prize Picks. Use promo code CLNS on Prize Picks. You'll get deposit match up to $100. This is Still Potable, the best Celtics podcast Monday through Friday. If you want more Still Potable, find us on patreon.com/stillpotable. I am Sam Jam Packer, joined by Brian B. Rob Rob from masslive.com. And we got some actual news, B-Rob. For the past couple of weeks, it's been mostly analyzing games that do not matter, but we got some news that actually matters. Jrue Holiday signing a four-year, what was the total number, $130 million extension?
$135, I believe, yes.
That's a lot of money for the second oldest player on the Celtics roster. That was my first reaction. It was like, wow, they're going to be paying him a lot of money for a lot of years. I don't know how it works out with the cap going up, and maybe we should be looking at this as percentage of the cap, but my first reaction was, holy moly, that's a lot.
It's definitely a sign of a good agent when it's a situation where they know they have the Celtics not over a barrel here, but essentially being like, okay, yeah, we know that it'd help you guys out a lot if we take less next year and beyond that, but what do we get for doing that? And how about, hey, how about 4 years, essentially the same contract you got 4 years ago? We'll just run it back. And like you said, the percentage of the cap changes. So it's certainly not apples and oranges on that front, but Jrue Holiday is going to be making a lot of money at 37 years old. And just like Al Horford kind of did when, like, in his career, like at the end of the line, got that one last big deal. Jrue Holiday did now too. How that ages out will be the big question here, but in the short term, this certainly creates an even rosier outlook for this team, I feel like.
I mean, it's great for keeping this core together. The big question for me is like, well, what does this mean for the Derek White extension? Because Jaylen Brown's giant extension kicks in this offseason. Tatum's going to sign a giant extension that's going to kick in the following offseason. And so we have some wiggle room for the Celtics in terms of when all of that money is going to need to be spent. But are they 2 years from now, are they going to be willing to be a team that's in the past the second apron? There's a lot of restrictions with that.
Well, past the second apron in 2 years.
And so Kristaps is still on the books then. What does this mean for Derek White? Are they just going to say, hey, this core five just produced the best regular season in 15 years. Why would we not spend money to keep it together? But that was my logical next question, because I didn't know if they were be willing to do both a Holiday and a Derek White extension. And if it was me, I would pick Derek White, just him being a younger player, kind of a more dynamic player on offense. But maybe there is willing to spend money any which way, in which case everyone should get paid. I should get an extension.
Just a matter of time. Still, Pablo joins the Celtics organization with or Packard, specifically. But yeah, it's this is a classic with the Celtics checkbook being like, listen, we're gonna figure this out later. The vibes are too good right now. Jrue Holiday has been the ultimate, good teammate during this season, and everyone else is under contract through next year, and so if we leave this kind of hanging out there, then that, that does create just a little bit of uncertainty for Holiday, and kind of shows an example of like, hey, we take care of our people when they, buy into the team concept. But as far as all your big picture questions, Packard, are very fair, because not only, again, the contract here makes running it back next year just very doable. Like it's a number that they don't have to even lose anyone else in the roster. Essentially, they could probably, they're going to be spending a lot. They're going to be over the second year, but they're going to have limitations. But if they want to bring it back next year, they can. After that, it's who knows. And I think it's all going to come down to what happens these next 2 years in the playoffs. And certainly one option would be like, hey, maybe ownership just is willing to spend record amounts. And that would be very, very pleasing to the Celtics fan base, because technically there's nothing that keeping them from doing that beyond just insane luxury tax penalties, which are set to be due. But the other factor is, yeah, like who someone in all likelihood is going to have to go. And the important thing about this for the Celtics in this contract now, it's like, do they think all these contracts they have in their books, those are going to have good value around the league no matter what? So it's like, if they do have to pull this apart, and if they decide, hey, we do want to keep Derek White on extension over Jrue Holiday or Jaylen Brown or whoever, like we're going to be able to still get a lot for player X down the line. And I think that's with this deal, I think they probably feel pretty confident they're going to be able to do that if this is the deal that ends up being on the chopping block.
Yeah, and I think that short-term, long-term perspective is important. Like this, Drew's already making $36 million this year, so it's not like it's a drastic change in his current contract situation, right. And so it's that much easier to run it back. There is, like, I think, pretty sure, you're probably more knowledgeable about the cap than I am, but there's a new TV deal coming in. I don't know if it's this year or next year, and so you got to anticipate that the cap is going to go up at least. I think the max amount it can go up each year is 10%.
Yep.
So what, $35 million maybe 2 years from now is just not going to be as much of a financial burden. And maybe even it's a deal that's more movable. I'm assuming they'll do some sort of cap smoothing to avoid the kind of Kevin Durant going to the Warriors, because everyone just all of a sudden has giant cap space now. I think they might have learned from that mistake. So hopefully the players union learned from that mistake, because as much as like Al Farouq Aminu benefited from that free agency class, there's a bunch of subsequent free agents who didn't. And so I think it's an interesting deal. It keeps the squad together for then like immediate future. And then future Brad has to deal with, and future Mike Zarin will have to deal with whatever that larger cap number is. And I think I think one of the more interesting questions is like, it's not like Jrue Holiday has taken a downturn in his terms of his talent, but he's going to be 37 by the end of that contract. Guards traditionally age differently than kind of bigger players. I feel like all of our collective minds in Celtics lands are a bit skewed just by watching Al Horford continue to be excellent. Like that's not normal. Players normally, like the prime of their careers is 28, 29, and it's usually a downhill from there. Drew's in extremely good shape, and I think that you would anticipate him still being effective, but just for guards in general, they're normally not great after 35.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, we've seen it firsthand, just guards in their 30s, undersized guards, particularly in this organization the last 10 years, have not aged out well at all. Jrue Holiday is a little bit of a bigger guard. Like you said, the body type you probably feel a little bit better about. And yeah, it's like, and clearly, I think the big thing for the Celtics is like the 3-point shooting looks to like is seems to be getting better with age, like it has it up Al Horford. And that's a skill along with his defense that is certainly going to translate, you know, they hope clearly for at least the beginning of this deal. And it's funny, though, because like Drew, a couple years ago, I don't know if you saw the interview Packard when he was on, I think, with Evan Turner and Andrew Iguodala. And he talked about like, oh, is this like, was this, he was going to talk about retiring like around now, around when his current contract ended. So maybe at the end of next season. And
yeah,
now,
maybe he just retires. And maybe right, we don't have to think any of this. Yeah.
And he does. I mean, he also does have a player option at the end of this deal. I think Adam Himmelsbach reported that first. But this is, but yeah, like it's gone officially where it's like, oh, I might retire now. But like, oh, you know, I'm going to get an extra $130 million.
I might stick around for, you know, $35 million a year for the next couple of years. But
do you see any drop off though for him? This like, I guess usage. It's like, yeah, you don't feel good about him being a number one or a number two. But what are your? Do you feel like he can like? Is this contract gonna look like an albatross to you in 3 years? Do you think this is where he could be like, you know what, he could pull out Horford here and just be a good value the whole way through?
I think like if he is just playing on a team with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and doesn't necessarily need to be a high usage individual, I think it's super, there's like a lot of potential for this to work out. I also, him just being out, I think it's an overpay if he becomes like a six man role, like Al. Like, I think Al, the beauty of that contract or his extensions is that they're like able to kind of come down on salary as his role kind of got more reduced. I think if Drew Holiday in the third and fourth years of this extension is just a guy coming off the bench making $35 million, then it's probably an overpay. But I don't see any like real signs of him like taking a decline in performance. But that's just like also because we haven't really seen like him have to, I'm not going to say exert himself. He's an NBA player who's tried very hard in all of these games, but it's not like he's had to shoulder the burden of like carrying a team. And so I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question. Presumably the Celtics think he's going to be fine because they probably wouldn't give him a player option in year four, but we'll see.
The way the deal is set up is obviously very friendly to Drew and his camp because, you know, getting that player option is like, oh, maybe he wants to get one more deal at the end of the, or at least certainly be able to opt out. And at that point, maybe he makes a more team friendly deal at that point where he gets a couple more extra years and with the reduced, cap hit for the present for the Celtics or whatever team he's on at that point. But Holiday's camp, I mean, they knew, like you looked at the offseason here, Packard. There's not a lot of good free agency names hitting the market. And the guys that are hitting the market are probably going to re-sign with their own teams, like a Pascal Siakam, if you will. So the Celtics clearly, like, I think both sides liked each other here, but Holiday was like, listen, I can go get a max contract from like the Sixers probably, or the Orlando Magic. And so do you guys want to like see if I can do that? Or do you want to take care of this now? And if you do want me to take care of this now, then you got to give me all 4 years. And so that was, That's I think negotiation 101 there.
Yeah, and I think it makes perfect sense for the Celtics to be like, let's not mess up the team that's up 14 games in the Eastern Conference. Like, no matter what happens in the playoffs, like you're gonna run it back. You're pretty limited in what you can do. Even if there's like a colossal choke in the playoffs, like you're gonna run it back and just try to figure out what went wrong because the core of the roster here is clearly high functioning, and so I think it's a move that makes sense for both sides.
It's funny. Like, this is literally the last question mark you have about this team right now.
And other than the whole performance in the playoffs.
Yeah, performance in the playoffs.
Oh,
But any lingering questions beyond, like you said, core performance is gone because now literally all eight players, Packard, all top eight players are signed through next season now. And I guess if you're Derek White's camp, maybe you see this deal and you're like, this makes things a little tougher for us. It's like the odds of them getting the extension maybe go down this offseason because of this, but he might, like we've talked about, like, is he at a point now where he's like, I can't even sign that extension because I want more money than the rules allow me to get anyway from the Celtics.
Yeah. I think it's the most interesting for Derek White, but for this year, for the next, like this year and all of next season, the squad is locked in. The squad's playing well. And so I think it makes sense for everyone involved. We're going to take a break, hear from our friends at Prize Picks, and we'll be back on the other side.
All right, let's take a break here to hear from our sponsor, Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app with more than 3 million members. It is the easiest and the most exciting way to get in on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. March may be over now, but the biggest moments in college basketball tip off this month at the Final Four. Be a part of it. All the action on Prize Picks for both men and women's college basketball coming up this weekend. And you can also get in on the NBA playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level. The basketball's postseason. The playoffs begin, obviously, in 2 weeks, but you can get in the play-in round starting on April 16th at Prize Picks. So I know in the final couple weeks of the regular season here, one area to keep an eye on Prize Picks will be certainly with the Celtics and some of their bench players. I think there's going to be a lot more opportunities there for the likes of Peyton Pritchard, Sam Hauser of the world, while the starters rest up. So keep an eye on that. So if you want to check out Prize Picks, you can download the app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's CLNS on Prize Picks for a first deposit match up to $100 on Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy on Prize Picks. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Still Potable. I'm Jay King from The Athletic here with Brian Robb from MassLive.com. There's not a whole lot going on in the NBA, at least as it comes to the Celtics, but we did receive some Giannis news. He's going to be okay. Now, how okay for the Bucks, we will find out, but he did not hurt his Achilles. It is a calf strain, and I'm going to read the Shams Charania tweet right now. It said, calves are undeniably tricky, and these types of strains have timetable of at least 1 to 2 weeks, but rehab will determine a length of time for the two-time NBA MVP. So, B-Rob, how does this news shuffle the landscape for you in the Eastern Conference?
I mean, first off, it kind of just opens the door for Milwaukee to really slide down to 4 or 5 because they have two games against Orlando and a road game against Oklahoma City coming up, Jay. So they got the big win against the Celtics on Tuesday night, but those are not three gimmies left. And they'll be playing Wednesday night here against Orlando, the first one of those, but it's pretty jam packed behind them with the Knicks, the Cavs, both having pretty easy schedules, and the Magic obviously having control of their own destiny here. So all we talked about, like, oh, do the Celtics want the Bucks, you know, to get that 2 seed or get 4 and 5? That's what we talked about on Monday. It looks like even despite them falling on Tuesday night here, it's very realistic that unless Lillard and Middleton kind of take over, that they could begin a deep slide here with Giannis certainly out for this week.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. And obviously the Magic and probably the Thunder are going to have things to play for.
Right.
So they're not going to be resting guys. They're not going to be taking it easy in those games. And for the Bucks, who have been pretty bad when like one of their guys sits most of the season, or pretty average at least, could be a tall task to win one of those games even, or certainly all three with Giannis out. The bigger thing to me is, how is he going to look in 10 days now when the playoffs start? And is that going to impact him in the first round? Because if he's not ready to start that series, we saw what happened with them in Miami last year.
Sure.
And that Bucks team was a better Bucks team, or at least in the regular season. But, you know, he misses, what was it, a game and a half in that series, and it threw everything off. It allowed the Heat to get enough momentum to turn around their entire season overnight. And so how does he look? Could they be first round fodder if he's not right? I tend to lean toward he's pretty invincible, and he'll probably come back from this more quickly than basically anyone alive. But they've kind of had a snake bitten season, and this is just one more layer of it.
Right. I mean, he's certainly going to try. Like, he's not going to play in that first round series, even if maybe they send him out the first game or two if he's not ready to go yet. But you're right. Like, Cavs are just a tricky thing. And you just don't, and the way he went down last night.
Even Cavs at first. I was like, yeah,
they're kind of, that's a tricky team, Jay. You don't know what they're going to get when you want to, like, from Allen or Mobley.
That is true.
But the situation there, it's like, all right, you're going to get Giannis. And if Giannis is not, even Giannis at 80, 70, 80% is still a very important player. But in a first round series against the Sixers or something like that, that could turn the tables if you were certainly the Heat, given those two teams' history. So it's just another obstacle here for Milwaukee on a night where, like, okay, they finally, play a good half against the Celtics, look like they're, get all three of their stars together, and now that's certainly not going to happen before the postseason again. And it just, for all the positive signs for the Celtics in terms of their path in the Eastern Conference, this was certainly, you have to add to the list here, because it's hard to imagine Giannis just getting back to fully 100% at any point during this playoff run if he kind of rushes back.
Yeah, this could potentially be huge news for me personally. I have a gentleman's bet with one of my men's league teammates that the Orlando Magic will finish with a top four seed at any point in Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner's journey as teammates.
Wow.
I made this last year. He was sleeping on the Magic, and I was like, that's a good young core. They're going to be pretty good. And he said, if they're ever a top four seed, then you'll win this gentleman's bet. And could be year one. So I'm pretty excited about that possibility. Not that Giannis is hurt, but I'm pretty excited for the bragging rights of knowing that the Magic would be pretty good.
Yeah, so sleeping easy for. Didn't think that would come to fruition this soon, but there you go. It's right there, for it. But
that's big for me. It's funny because the Celtics they've known their seed for like what, a month. They've had it wrapped up for a month, and everything else is just jumbled, just a mess,
chaos. It's kind of, it makes it fun though. Like this, the five final days of the regular season here, it's chaos in both conferences. Like we don't know pretty much 1 through 8 out west, or even 1 through 10 out west is we know what teams are going to be, but we have no idea what order they're going to be falling in at this point. And the same is true in the east, 2 through 8. We know the Hawks and the Bulls are going to be 9 and 10, but everything else is a complete free for all. And that makes it fun. Certainly if you're a Celtics fan, just to put your feet up, put on League Pass or whatever you got, TNT, and see where the chips fall. But certainly with, you hate to see injuries, period, just for quality of play stuff. But with Giannis hobbled, with Randall out, with the Magic, just certainly not looking like they're a team that's going to be a forceful threat here in the East, in the later rounds at least. The path is certainly there for the Celtics, and it potentially could be an easier than expected path to
except the for the first round.
Except for the first round, except for potentially Joel Embiid.
First round, which could be Embiid, could be the Miami Heat. Right now, I had the odds in front of me beforehand, but right now, as we're recording this at 5 p.m. on Wednesday, so before any of the Wednesday games, Basketball Reference gives Miami a 23.4% chance of being the 8 seed, gives Philadelphia a 25% chance of being the 8 seed, and then Atlanta and Chicago both have about 20%. So could go still any way for the Celtics. The Pacers are a little more secure, probably going to be away from that 8 seed, although they haven't totally solidified that yet, but looking more and more like Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam are going to avoid the play-in tournament. And it looks like it's going to be Miami Philly in that first play-in game, and then one of the loser could end up being the Celtics first round opponent, which is wild. It really is wild. Especially like the Knicks are hurt, the Bucks are hurt, the 76ers are getting healthy, and Joel Embiid looked very good in his most recent game. He's come back and really played strong. Obviously his conditioning was an issue after during the first game. He looked like he might just fall over and just pass out in the middle of the game on the court. But he looks good, and he came back and he changed things immediately for that Philadelphia team. So they're going to be a handful. If it is them in the first round, Miami always got to have respect for them. Although Duncan Robinson kind of had a weird thing. He came back from injury, I believe, and said it didn't feel right. So that's something to track for them. But yeah, it's just could be a nightmare first round matchup, or it could be the Hawks or Bulls. What did you think of the Torrey Craig, Andre Drummond debacle?
I mean, did Drummond hurt his ankle on that play? I saw that he got he was out shortly after that. That would have made that, just taking that to a different level.
I don't think it was that play, but
won't admit it if it was.
Yeah. Man.
Holy shit. Yeah. I don't know what I mean, I don't know Torrey Craig. I mean, I know him as like a random bench role player. I did not expect him to be a guy that would do that in like the second quarter of a game. Just being like, that's just not the guy on my bingo card to pull off something like that. But that's an all-timer right there. Have we seen anything close to that ever?
The Ricky Davis, dunk miss, the Von Wafer dunk miss. Where he started celebrating it, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought that was circulating today. Yeah, he started celebrating, and then the ball rebounded, like the landed like right next to him, and then they lost it because he wasn't paying attention on the same play.
That was a great one, but I'm not sure anything compared, especially because Ricky Davis was actually one of the greatest dunkers of his time. Torrey Craig is just a guy who stands around the perimeter and watches other guys do things. He's like the last person you'd expect to throw it off the backboard and try to have this massive dunk. And of course, Andre Drummond's looking at it. He's like, what the hell is going on?
I got to get him back up here.
And so everyone was making fun of Drummond for that. And I get it. It was that to me was not Drummond's fault. That was 100%. What is Torrey Craig doing? Drummond was trying to go get a ball that was launched off the backboard and put it back. He's Mr. Offensive Rebound. Torrey Craig was the one who was a big enough maniac to just toss that thing off the backboard. And it was a bad toss. It was not like the easiest dunk. It was, I could not believe it. And I love that Billy Donovan was just like so mad about it. That cracked me up that he was really fuming about it.
Has he left for Kentucky yet? Is that the final straw?
Seriously. Yeah, somebody tweeted like, if he didn't want to go to Kentucky before, he might reevaluate that now. Just wild.
But I mean, think of the Bulls, Hawks, I guess Trae Young potentially coming back tonight. So that does add at least another layer of intrigue for potential Celtics first round opponents, and then just that Hawks Bulls first round, you know, play in matchup where if you didn't like the Hawks before in that one, you probably do now, given that they're going to get pretty close. I mean, they're still going to Sadiq Bey's out for the year, but they're beginning closer to their fuller rotation. They've been, you know, at least a different team without Trae Young here, but certainly adds a different dynamic here heading into next week.
Yeah. Although, If you're the Celtics, I don't think you'd mind seeing either Atlanta or Chicago come through that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, clearly.
Trae Young or no Trae Young, nothing Atlanta has done has been impressive this season. Nothing. Except sweeping the Celtics. Except DeJounte Murray's 44 points on 44 against the Celtics and a game winner. But other than that, it's like truly nothing that they've done has suggested that they have a level to reach that should scare any team with legitimate title aspirations. So yeah, Atlanta, Chicago, if those teams get into it, I think it would be a quick series. And right now it'd be one of those teams in the second play-in game. So Celtics could see one of those teams, pretty good chance of seeing one of those teams actually. So a lot to still figure out as we come to the last, what is it, 4 or 5 days of the regular season? It's really getting close here. What did you think of, did you have any big takeaways from the Celtics' performance against the Bucks?
No, I think you nailed, I mean, the Luke Kornet three-point attempt was clearly the number one storyline coming out of that game.
That was it.
I mean, it was right there. He could have really put himself in quite the spot in Celtics history by not taking a three, given the start of his career there. But yeah, I mean, the small ball Tatum at the five stuff was, I think, interesting to just give that the look. But it was funny when he talking to reporters after the game, he's like, yeah, I don't like doing that. Like, I don't like to bang around with Brook Lopez. So that is clearly, you understand why they don't go to that look at all. But I do wonder, do you think that is a look at all they will try in a certain matchup in the playoffs, or is that just break in case of emergency if Porzingis gets hurt or Al gets hurt?
I think it's probably break in case of emergency, just because you don't sacrifice much when you go big. You know, it's not like you throw Kristaps out there and you're lacking. Kristaps would need to be out or in foul trouble for it to become an option, because
Fred Katz.
And even Fred, can you guys hear
that? Come aboard. Yeah.
Fred Katz is calling me. I gotta take the Bluetooth off here. that was funny. Yeah, I wonder what Fred wants.
What does Fred want?
Yeah. But Fred Katz phone calls, they last a while. Fred's a talker. He's one of the few people I'll talk to on the phone for just a long time. So hopefully he wants something.
Well, we got him in the pot at some point.
He wrote a great Jalen Brunson story too. Everyone should read his Jalen Brunson story. It was about his off-ball work and about his dad just tearing into him in front of Tom Izzo. It was good stuff. But yeah, I can't see them using that too often, just because you don't get too much benefit from going small shooting wise. You can put five great shooters on the court and have a 7-2 guy out there. So, but it is interesting. And if they, for whatever, if injury comes or foul trouble, I don't think Joe would shy away from that in certain matchups. Like, you're not going to try it against Joel Embiid, but the Bucks don't want to post up Brook Lopez. And then you can take advantage of them. I thought the Celtics got great looks when they went to that small lineup toward the end of the third quarter. I thought that the difference in their offense when they went to that was just night and day. So it's something to think about, but probably a club you don't pull out of the bag too often.
Yeah, it's Porzingis and Horford are good enough 3-point shooters where it's just not needed, even though it is a fun wrinkle to have if it's called upon. We have a little bit of breaking news here, Jay. The injury report has come out for the Knicks game on Thursday.
Ooh.
And it is crowded. all five starters listed as questionable.
Oh wow.
Along with Xavier Tillman. So we talked about earlier this week, what are the Celtics going to decide for these games? And it certainly seems like
with everybody questionable, could go one of two ways. Either they rest everybody,
right,
or they go half and half.
That's true. They do the back and back. So is this a national game tomorrow night? I'm trying to.
It's got to be, because it's a Thursday night, right?
It's Thursday night. Yeah, let me check this real quick. But yeah, that might preclude them from. So you're right. It is. This must be a TNT game, since there's anyone going on 7:30. So that would probably preclude them from doing the full rest if they want to save a couple hundred thousand dollars for ownership's pocketbook there.
Yeah. So,
but it won't be full steam ahead. I was wondering if they were going to do this as a dress rehearsal type game. Does not look like that'll be the case.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll even do that. They only have three chances left. It's a if they sit everyone tomorrow and do it in the next game.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it, or you could just do it for a half on Sunday or something like that against the Wizards if you just want to get everyone.
Do they need a dress rehearsal?
Probably not, to be honest, because if you're not going to do it, if you're going to do it and you want to simulate just some, you know, tougher action here. But I think for your bigger guys, I think the bigger priority is like just get Horford and Porzingis, like make sure they're not dinged up at all this week. And then everyone else kind of got some of that Tuesday night against the Bucks anyway. Like, they clearly tried to win that game for at least 40 minutes. I don't think, certainly in their health over a dress rehearsal is clearly seems to be the smart priority at this point.
100%. I think health, and also you have to make sure that guys are still in like top shape and
right
game shape, and that when the playoffs come, they're ready to play 40 to 42 minutes if necessary. But as far as like playing more minutes together, I don't think they need that. They have proven what they can do. They've been experimenting with different stuff for like a month now, trying out, you know, doing more switching with Kristaps Porzingis, trying out funky zones. They've kind of used, because of the cushion that they've had a lot of time to just try stuff. And so I don't think you necessarily need to get everybody together on the same night But what a weird thing to prepare for as Joe Mazzulla. Like, there's no real right answer for how you should approach six meaningless games at the end of the season. And really, it's been more meaningless games than that. But yeah,
good problem to have.
Yeah, not a bad problem
compared to the rest of the Eastern Conference here, but
not a bad problem at all.
We should get, though, Jay, and your a great walk off to your paternity leave here. We had a great piece today I wanted to talk about here on Chris on Porzingis at the Athletic, titled "Christos Porzingis' Career Was at a Crossroads." Then he learned to trust the numbers. I'm sure everyone listening to this pod hopefully already has is subscribing to the Athletic, but definitely check it out if you haven't. Jay kind of really goes into the changes here that Porzingis made in his career, particularly in the post here and how that's evolved. So, I mean, take us kind of behind the scenes here, Jay, of like how this piece came to be and what the type of digging you had to do to get.
Yeah.
To
so I kind of got lucky with it. So one of the things I listened to his podcast with JJ Redick, actually, I don't know whether that was before the season or at the beginning of the season. And one of the things Kristaps said during that was that he wishes he had leaned into analytics earlier. I was like, I stowed it away as something I wanted to ask him about later on, because of course, like, everyone remembers the Rick Carlisle rant when he was like, yeah, guys, going to the post for Porzingis is not good. Like, stop asking us to do that. It's just not right. It's not efficient. He's not good at that. And then as he became like this killer low post guy with the Celtics and was like that last year in Washington, it kind of stood out to me as one of the kind of oddities, I guess, or great developments in the NBA the last couple of seasons has just been how he's gone from truly somebody who his own team wanted to avoid in the post to one of the best switch beaters in the league. And so I talked to him about it, and he said, yeah, like, I talked to my friend Zanis, and we basically just went over every single thing. So I was like, oh, cool. That's pretty cool. Like analytics hated him. And so he went to the analytics to fix it. I feel like there's not a lot of, like, you always hear about the guy who is, you know, good at analytics. You always hear about, but you don't hear a lot about the guy who dove really far into the numbers to find out what he could do to fix himself. And so that, from just like a basketball fan perspective, it was really interesting to me. And the more I dug into it and found out, and then he happened to be like just working with Dean Oliver, who's like the godfather of basketball analytics. And
yeah, I forgot he was with Washington for that. Like, that was a really, like, fun wrinkle there. Because
yeah, like how, like,
how the odds of that?
The 7'2" dude who suddenly has a love for the analytics just has Dean Oliver on staff and just wants to pepper him with questions all the time. So I just thought it was really interesting to me just how detailed they got with everything that they looked at and the studies that they did and the work that they did to kind of strip his game down and rebuild it. And none of it, at the end of the day, like, none of it seemed too complicated. It was just basically like, let's focus on what you do best. Let's make it better. And let's see what you do shitty. Let's just take that away. And they kind of rebuilt Kristaps's post game. And now you can see it in his game. It's like, he never fades away anymore. He used to fade away all the time. He gets much better positioning. Remember when Marcus Smart used to be able to like fight him away from the basket?
Sure.
And then that stopped working. And so it's just a really cool story about a guy who the numbers told him he sucked at the post. And instead of being like, hey, I'll just stop posting up, he decided I'll fix the numbers. And so I had a lot of fun kind of working on it and digging into that, because it really is impressive to me, like, to have that mindset to suck at something and not just be like, ah, I'm going to suck forever and just address it and overcome it. And the amount of work, and obviously he's like really gifted, and so that helps, but just the ability to digest all the information, I think, was pretty impressive from Kristaps.
Yeah, I think, and to be honest, like, it kind of paves the way in terms of what he's become this year too, in terms of like being able to make those adjustments to his game, and like, as you chronicled so well, and then now to this year, like, again, adapt his game again in terms of the pieces he has around him here. And like you said, he's as efficient as he's been his entire career. And that's not like there's not a lot of shots that he takes anymore, period, where you're just like, what is he doing? Like, you can count on a couple of those pretty much from everyone else in the starting lineup outside of maybe Derek White here and there. But of course, Porzingis, it's always, he gets in the spots he, you know, thrives in. And it was really interesting to see how he just got to that point with like just kind of digging into himself and figuring out, okay, how do I fix this?
Yeah. And honestly, like, I should have talked to the Celtics front office for the story, because I do wonder, like, if he hadn't become a good post-up player, I don't think they go after him, because that was the piece that they really looked at and thought, this will change our team. This will be the solution to us, to the switching coverages, to some of the other defensive strategies that have worked against him in the past. So I do think to some extent that his ability to become a great post-up player was why he ended up landing in Boston, and why the Celtics saw him as such a good fit, and that the strides that he made while basically nobody was watching him while he was with the Wizards, like, that's what Brad Stevens saw and what drew him to adding Porzingis as kind of, hopefully in their eyes, the missing piece to their offense, somebody that can make sure that they keep functioning while against the best defenses.
Yeah, it's and now we'll see again how well this all translates to the bigger stage starting next week. But as far as the 82 game grind goes with this team, I think it's probably exceeded everyone's expectations in terms of what he was, how well it would translate already to this group, and now clearly becoming one of the best regular season team for the Celtics in the last 15 years, and now potentially beyond that, maybe something historic, depending on how big these blowouts get in the last three games. We're going to be looking closely. Sean Graney will have us posted on the point differentials in NBA history for the top.
They got to really get some blowouts.
They got to do some work here. It's not going to be. It's not
Boston, easy. Milwaukee didn't help.
Did you guys hit on Nimi last night? I forgot. I'm trying to think. You guys did, right?
We did a little bit. Didn't spend too much time on it. But yeah, it was cool to see how excited he was to do it. He spoke after, I believe, their G League Finals win. And what a day for Nimi.
Get a
new contract, get a win in the G League Finals, have people doing the wave for you. Just quite a day.
But I believe we have to, like, was it the Red Claws, the main Celtics coach was on your side on this, on the wave.
Oh yeah.
This is a big win.
Blaine Miller. For
Team Anti-Wave.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, Blaine.
We're going to have him on the show here to elaborate.
I love that. To just spit on your whole home fan base and be like, the wave sucks.
It was a championship game. I'm totally with him. Like,
yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Focus on the game.
Priorities here. For fourth quarter, when it's a blowout, okay. Championship game, no matter what, unless they're up by like 50, which they weren't. Like,
okay, let's talk about the main Celtics for a while. And not anything too nitty gritty, but does the fact that they're winning and the fact that they have a chance to win a championship make you feel any better about the guys they have there, just in general?
Well, I think it's, first of all, Jay, they're setting the table for the Boston Celtics to know how to win. this is like they're showing a potentially complete playoff run here. You do have to credit, there is a lot of talent there. But for that to translate as it is, like, again, I think it's certainly says something. This I think is the furthest they've gone in the playoffs up there
I think it's the finals.
So I think it bodes well because this is, whether it's JD Davidson or Jordan Walsh, it's like these are like, this is stuff that you're fitting into different roles on a team that's, you know, going up against, you know, a lot of these G League teams now have like 3-4 NBA prospects or veterans. And so it's the level of that league is getting better. And so anytime you're kind of building on something down there, especially under a new coach, I think that it's bodes well for what those guys could eventually become in, you know, potentially bit roles in Boston down the line.
Yeah. And obviously those guys would play a lot different roles if they ever emerged in Boston. But to me, like, it's really hard for a G League team to focus on winning because not a single person there wants to be there. They all want to be in the NBA. They all want different opportunities. They're all trying to get somewhere else in their career. And so when guys like in that type of situation are willing to submit themselves to the team concept and do the dirty work and not care about, you know, more touches and shot attempts, that bodes well to the mindset and character of the players you have on the roster. So that to me is the part that's good. And that's the culture that the Celtics want to build, is that like, no matter what type of competition, like, they're competing for each other. And so that's the only part of it I think could be pretty meaningful. Other than, you know, those young guys getting experience and maybe one day emerging. Who knows? Jordan Walsh does some fun stuff.
Nice little dunk there the other night. So I want to say they head to Oklahoma City either, I think, Thursday or Friday for its best of three series. They could wrap things up there. If not, things shift back to the expo. I do wonder here, Jay, with three games and four nights coming up, how are they? You keep all these main Celtics there. I mean, it's going to be an empty end of the bench for the Celtics with for some of these games, at least. Do you risk the energy?
I might have shared this story on the podcast before. I'm not sure if I have. One time I covered Luke Herangode, of all people. Ooh, when sure. He was in the fourth game on four nights because the Canton Charge were in, I think, the finals, and the Cavs were at the end of a lost season and playing all their end of bench guys a lot of minutes. So he was playing like 35 to 40 minutes per night every game while shuttling back and forth from the NBA to the G League for four straight nights. He did a back to back to back to back. And I went to grab a bite to eat. This was in Springfield, Massachusetts. And I went to grab a bite to eat, and he was at the hotel bar just chowing down wings, just looking exhausted after the end of it. And it was just classic. So I'm sure you probably didn't expect Luke Herangode talk.
But
that's my way of saying you typically prioritize the NBA team and try to get those guys NBA reps if you can. So
for game three of the G League final. I mean, actually, this bodes well, though. So they play on Thursday.
It's not like Boston to Maine.
But yeah, Thursday game two. Obviously, everyone will be out there, so they're all going to miss this next game. But then they won't play again until Monday. So
Wick needs
Friday,
to
Sunday, jet. You get everyone exactly. You get everyone back to the Garden for those games, and then you can ship them up to Maine on Monday if necessary for game three. But Luke Herangode reference. What else? I think we should just wrap it up right there because that's
I've never seen someone look more exhausted. He was just like slumped over at the hotel bar, just crushing wings. After
I feel like he
was averaging like 20 for the NBA and 20 in the G League.
We go back and forth.
Like he was just stacking up numbers everywhere, and wild. So
he played for the Celtics for like a year for a little bit. I feel like too. It's like
he played some minutes.
It's Luke then he went to Cleveland. Now is that?
good times at the beginning of my career.
All right, Jay, is this your sign off here for a little bit? Not too long, I bet, but
yeah, next time.
Any final words?
I'll have a son.
We're gonna miss you and we're excited for you, but you're not gonna be gone too long, I feel like.
I can't wait to meet the little guy. I'll have him dunking by next week. Splashing at least like 45% of three pointers by the time he's two. He's gonna be doing plyos really young. We gotta get him a lot more athletic than his old man.
I've got the baby. I've got a Lou hoop for you already that Zach will grow out of, so we can just bring it over.
Yes, here. Yes. Need that Fisher Price.
We can have him start battling.
Yeah,
for 2-on-2 tournaments.
Yeah, I need to get him more basketball gear, but that will come. There will be plenty of time to get him basketballs and basketball gear. I will talk to you guys later, kids of gods and legends. We appreciate you, B Rob. Appreciate you. And we're still potable. Still potable. Still potable.